Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Makone, how are you doing?
It is unfortunately gloomy on this side of town, so I've been better.
You know, I can say much the same thing myself. My arm injury has been causing me no end of headaches, but I seem to be on the mend. But if I seem a little bit low energy, as Donald Trump once said, then please excuse me for that. But nonetheless, we shall try to have an enlightening and engaging discussion. And so let's start off with something that is quite amusing as our first topic. And that is that it looks like there is trouble brewing with the national dialogue. This appears to have been something that President Cyril Ramaphosa is pretty interested in, although I think much of the country is not particularly that interested in it. And things started to go wrong when the DA withdrew from the national dialogue. And things have continued to go wrong. It came out that the national dialogue was going to cost, what is it, 700 million rand, I think was the figure that was reported in the media. And now a number of organizations which were taking part in the national dialogue, foundations representing the legacies of Steve Biko, Albert Luthuli, Oliver Tambo, Archbishop Tutu, F.W. de Klerk, and Thabo Mbeki have all decided to pull out of the national dialogue. They had a meeting with President Cyril Ramaphosa on Thursday, and they, despite that meeting, they decided that, nah, this thing isn't working for them. The foundation said, what began as a citizen-led initiative has unfortunately shifted towards government control. The rushed timeline, constrained logistics, and limited interactive design mean the proposed convention no longer offers a meaningful platform for engagement. We cannot lend our names to a gathering that does not allow for genuine dialogue. There was also lots of concern about accommodation and transport and the sort of logistics, which all seem to be a mess up as well. And McCorney, I'm just struck by... This week, the ANC has had a completely different national bad headline every single day. It started off with all the embarrassing logistics stuff that went on at the National Executive Committee meeting. There was an attack on the ANC because of the venue they used for the National Executive Committee meeting. Then, of course, there was the fact that the tariffs landed anyway, and there was lots of chest thumping and proud declarations that we will not bow to imperialists, etc., etc. But really, it just now the national dialogue seems to be falling apart. I mean, it's just, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I am enjoying this view of civil society organizations finally offering some resistance to the ANC, just pushing through events, pushing through these activities that are supposed to be collaborative, right? That's what this national dialogue is supposed to be, a collaborative effort between government and civil society organizations about the future of South Africa, the next 30 years or the next generation of our democracy and proceeding, how to proceed thereof. I am enjoying just observing as these organizations are finally putting their foot down to what I read from what the Mbeki Foundation is alleging is that this dialogue was actually their idea. It emerges from 2015. So it's been in the works for years now. And I think because there's been so much disagreement within the GNU, it's an opportune time now to resuscitate it. And obviously, there'd be no need for a dialogue in 2015 or years prior, because the ANC had this hegemonic hold of our political discourse, and there was just this direct pipeline from, you know, the ANC's NECs, National Executive Committees and Elective Conferences, straight into mainstream South African politics. There's been no way of integrating alternative views of how to govern South Africa, of how to proceed, how to, for example, plan for economic growth. All those ideas so far have just come from whatever the ANC decides as its conferences. So yes, there hasn't really been a need for a dialogue over the last 10 years, but lo and behold, the emergence of the GNU on the scene, and suddenly you do need to take other parties into consideration. I'm very happy to see this development. My suspicion is that it's going to continue anyway, right? Because my from what I gather or make of President, former President Thabo Mbeki, is that he is loyal to the ANC to a fault. And, he came out very critical of John Steenhuisen and the DA's decision to withdraw from the dialogue. I don't think he'll follow in that in those footsteps. He's already shot himself in the foot there, saying that the DA must commit despite their grievances and despite the fact that this is just going to be another rubber stamp to whatever the ANC agrees on, whatever the ANC decides is the direction the GNU should undertake. So my suspicion is that there will be no follow through, and that the Mbeki Foundation will go to this event because appearances and looking united rather than genuinely uniting on issues, presenting that front of unity is still more important, unfortunately, to our former president. So I suspect that they'll go through with it. But I take their objections, and it seems to me that their problem is that firstly, the amount is so high, and this event is being put together in their names, right? And now this is going to affect their reputation because there's no way they can stand by while 700 million rands is being blown up for a talk shop in the names of Albert Luthuli, Robert Sobukwe, former President Mbeki himself, the Kathrada Foundation, the de Klerk Foundation. These are prestigious names that mean something. The Nelson Mandela Foundation as well. These are names that mean something to South Africa's democracy. And it's just not a good look to have this money being spent in their names and that they're not able to account for how that money is spent. And I think that's what the Mbeki Foundation is saying here and the others that are presenting this resistance. It's if this money is going to be spent in our name, we should at least know what it's being spent on and how it's being spent. And the government is not being transparent. It refuses to be held accountable, even by people like the Mbeki Foundation, who are amenable to the ANC. They wouldn't want to bring the national dialogue into disrepute. So I'm thoroughly enjoying this, Nick. And I encourage them to put their feet down as much as they can. But I suspect in the end, this thing will go ahead because Ramaphosa is actually saying that it will, according to this reporting.
No, so I mean, you made a great comment in our pre-show discussion before we went live that the national dialogue started off annoying and it's continued to be annoying before it's even begun, like in earnest. And I can't agree more. But I think this stuff actually has fundamentally torpedoed the political objectives of the national dialogue. I think Ramaphosa and the ANC wanted to use the national dialogue as a way to basically endorse their own policies. They were going to produce something that had like minor criticisms of government policy, but ultimately recommitted to everything, recommitted to the sort of National Democratic Revolution stuff, BEE, expropriation, micromanagement of the economy, all the things that we've seen from the ANC. And now, with organizations pulling out and the opposition attacking it and the whole thing just sort of melting down, it's no longer got that, it's not going to have that legitimacy that I think it might have had with middle of the road people, people who are sort of on the fence. And to me, then that this thing has actually kind of already failed before it's begun. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I think the invite they're also not reading the room, which is that South Africans are over having conversations. We all know what's wrong with South Africa, and I think we all agree that we need jobs, we need growth, we need investment, and those investment is the only way to get growth, and only through growth can we get jobs. What more needs to be discussed? There are thousands of national strategies. From small businesses, national strategies on how to develop small businesses, because the National Development Plan envisions that small businesses are going to be the key creator of jobs in tw by 2030. We are not close to that benchmark. There's strategies about how to eliminate crime. There are task forces, there are committees, there are commissions. We've had conversations at every single crossroads in this country. And unfortunately, without the DA, right, which is really the only party throughout the GNU, within the GNU, that's presented itself as being willing to oppose the ANC in any meaningful way. The others have just sort of gone along, even with damning policies such as increasing VAT. very unpopular position. It still makes no sense to me how this
I think
whole
also
party.
the Freedom Front Plus as well has usually joined the DA in its opposition.
The Freedom Front Plus as well. But the VAT thing was teed up to make those small parties look good and look like they can actually make a difference being within the GNU. And yet they just went along with the ANC still. So unfortunately, without the inclusion of the DA as being at least the most vocal within the government of national unity in its opposition or in its presentation of alternative views to the ANC, we still have that Luthuli House to Parliament pipeline. We still have that interrupted stream of ideas emerging from the ANC straight into mainstream politics. And this national dialogue is just another opportunity to carry on with that status quo. So South Africans, I believe, are looking on and they're like, well, one, we already know the problems that we have in our country. Two, this is just a public relations exercise to make the ANC look good, nothing else. The fact that they're not even willing to consider joining with civil society organizations that really have no skin in the game politically, right? The Ahmed Kathrada Foundation is does not benefit from participating in this national dialogue.
This is also these organizations here, as you mentioned earlier, these are like some of the most friendly to the ANC and civil society. If it's not like we were invited and are now walking out. This is like the ANC's usual kind of backers and proponents of all of their policy ideas and stuff for them to be pulling out. It's just so embarrassing.
When you look at the list of participants on this dialogue, you could give every one of them 10 million rand, and there'd still be a lot to go by in arranging this event. So they are right to be suspicious about exactly what this money is for. Even in the proposal for an alternative venue that would cost less, there's still resistance there. So the government is not willing to give an inch to the DA as a GNU partner or partners parties within the GNU that don't necessarily want to just be there to rubber stamp ANC ideas, but even innocent, benign civil society organization like the Steve Biko Foundation, like the Robert Sobukwe Foundation, and I don't even know what these guys do, right? That's how benign they are on the political landscape in South Africa. I mean, they obviously represent these enormous giants in the fight for freedom and the
In
fights against
history, yeah.
in history. But even them, they're being sidelined, they're being excluded from just having their eyes on how this event is being planned, what this money is being spent on. That is grounds enough to be suspicious about the substantiveness of this event. But also, is this just another heist? Is this just another opportunity to feed the caterers their right to want to have their eyes on the balance, on the
You
budget
see,
and the balance budget?
this is the thing I've been kind of really kind of coming home to me recently, is that even sometimes the ideology seems to take a back seat. The sort of grand political objectives, political survival is taking a back seat to feeding the caterers. It seems like the ANC struggles to do literally anything, can't even hold its own meetings without in some way sort of feeding the caterers, or not being able to because the caterers are being fed. It is so corrosive to the organization. I think it really is the reason that the paralysis is setting in, is that everyone in the ANC knows that everything is going wrong and that they need to do something different, and they all disagree about what the difference is. Some of them think they need to be more like the EFF. Some of them think they need to be more like the DA. Some of them think they just need to, be more deft in the way they're doing things. But there isn't any change. It's just plodding along the same direction, because to change anything is to upset all of the patronage networks. And the moment you do that, you're putting people's livelihoods at risk, and then suddenly they're going to turn on you inside the party. It's kind of fascinating to watch. It's like someone who knows they're about to drive off a cliff but refuses to turn the steering wheel.
Yeah, to a fault, like you're saying, driving off a cliff. I 100% agree with you. I think, unfortunately, feeding the caterers is still a big priority for, people in the party. And even if it's being ushered in as a legitimate national dialogue with these heavyweight foundations, not 700 million. I wonder what that 700 million could do to refurbish schools in rural areas or in townships, refurbish hospitals, build new extracurricular facilities for people in rural areas or where they have none, where the youth in those areas have no relief, nothing to do outside of going to school and, lend themselves to, doing drugs. That story that recently broke out, or doing engaging in disruptive practices. This money would probably go a far longer way in investing in our youth, investing in our infrastructure, investing in those extracurricular facilities. We all know this, and that's why we're all suspicious of this national dialogue. It's like, haven't the cadres chowed enough?
No, exactly. Okay, let's move on to our next topic. This is just another one of those stories where there's kind of lots of little details, and it really just speaks to how broken our justice system is, particularly our police. A woman has been awarded 1.1 million rand for being unlawfully detained for 33 days and also facing what the courts described as malicious prosecution. The Mpumalanga High Court in Mbombela has found that a woman arrested for possession of stolen property was a victim of unlawful arrest and detention, as well as malicious prosecution. This woman w was in her friend's house. She said that she was there because she was going to ask him for a cup of water. It's a bit of a weird story. Maybe she's lying about that. Doesn't really matter. And at the same as she arrived at her friend's house, there was someone she didn't know there who was talking to her friend, had gone into an argument with him, and then a whole bunch of people arrived and dragged her and her friend away to the police station. It turned out that this was essentially a local vigilante group in the area that she was, and they said that they had found stolen property inside her friend's house, and they handed her over to the cops. The cops appear to have not really bothered to look into what exactly was going on, just sort of took these guys' word for it and arrested her as well as her friend. The friend was charged with stolen property and involvement in house breakings and that sort of thing. But she was too, despite the fact that there was no evidence that she had been involved in any such thing. It wasn't her house. She wasn't there, and prior to the community group showing up to arrest her, she was taken to court and awaiting her trial. She was given bail of 1,000 rand, but this woman did not have a lot of money, so she was put in jail for 30 days until her parents were able to scrape together the 1,000 rand to pay her bail. Eventually, it turned out that the cops, despite knowing that they had no evidence to connect her to any crime, decided to move forward with the prosecution nonetheless. Eventually, after being in jail and having to pay this bond and things, the case was just dropped when the cops realized that they had no case here whatsoever. And she then went on to sue the police ministry and the police for this unlawful arrest and got this award of a pretty significant amount of money. So, Makone, there's lots of little details in this story. Firstly, the fact that essentially the policing in this instance was being done by like a vigilante group. Now, thank goodness they didn't decide to, set people alight in the streets, as so often happens with this horrible kind of thing. But regardless, like, why are the police just sort of not doing this kind of stuff themselves? Why are they just waiting for people to bring people into the station? Secondly, this woman was like so many others in our prisons who have not actually faced trial to be found guilty of something, but can't afford the bail, and so are just sitting there in jail waiting for something to happen. And then lastly, the completely bizarre decision of the cops, who knew that they had no evidence, to move forward with this case, thereby wasting their time, wasting the court's time, and wasting our money. Ugh, what do you make of this?
I think anyone who's had an encounter with the police knows, is familiar with this scenario where you present an issue to them and they have no interest in investigating anything, right? Unfortunately, this is what characterizes the nature of our SAPS. They're so compromised. They're just not interested, even as they sit behind the desk. They're not interested in actually going out and investigating things, and they're willing to traipse right through due process, keep people locked up for months. This lady is clearly so impoverished she can't afford a 1,000 rand bail. And I like what the judge's remark here, which she refers to an individual who spent, I think, just a day in prison and was awarded 30,000 rand in remedies for that unlawful arrest. This woman has certainly earned her 1 million in damages for this act. Unfortunately, these kind of instances, the only way to curb future events where the police are just careless in their arrests, are willing to cross due process, are not willing to actually engage evidence. These instances need to affect them personally, where a police's pay needs to be docked. That's the only way we're actually going to get an efficient police service, is if the consequences they face are personal. Because currently, it's us taxpayers who fund these damages, who fund these remedies, who pay out, when the police clearly just ignore due process and ignore presenting evidence. But if they have skin in the game, if the police experience personal consequences for failing to act and follow the law, then we will have a cleaned up, committed, vigilant, serious police. So it's unfortunate, but I do, this sounds very familiar to me as somebody who's encountered the police, is they just don't care and they're happy to delegate their role to either a CPF, a community policing forum, or just rogue vigilantes in
Or
community.
sometimes even private security companies. I know that in wealthier suburbs, you sometimes will have the cops literally asking the local security companies to do their patrol routes for them. It's,
That's
you know,
true.
the police is an organization that is so hollowed out that basically ordinary citizens, private companies, as you say, community police forums are so often like sort of holding them up. And you know, there are a few good cops in the system who just managed to do enough to hold the whole thing together, but it is such a shaky organization that it's kind of any wonder that, I mean, you know, obviously we have huge crime problems in South Africa, but it's any wonder that it's not even worse, considering the lack of capacity. You know, I think you raise a great point there as well. You know, we talk about the need for a lot of policy changes, and there are a the desperate need for a lot of policy changes across so much of government, catered appointment being an obvious example of something I think that hurts the police, particularly at the upper levels. But another key issue here is that you just need simple accountability management. When people mess up, they must be fired or they must be disciplined. There must be proper processes and investigation. It's not particularly sexy. It doesn't, you can't like rally behind it in a, you know, in a you know, great thing. But basically, what you need is good middle managers who identify performers, promote them, and identify people who don't perform and fire them, or fine them, or move them down into less important positions. If you have that across the whole of government, you will go a huge way to improving the situation. There'll still be many problems, but it's a big part of fixing the issues. And appointing those competent middle managers requires political will, and it requires a commitment to meritocracy. That, you know, makes no excuses for anything else, doesn't want to, you know, say, oh, well, we need 16 women and four of them must be black and three must be this color and 18 must be blue and whatever. It, you know, just focus on getting people who can keep law and order into every position.
Absolutely. People who are fit to do the job. And even those entities we've described, those are the ones that are on the safer side. It gets worse, in terms of entities that try to fill the void that's being left by the police when you think about construction mafias and other mafia entities, or just gangsters who extract rants, extract, solicit these protection fees for businesses from individuals in order to be left alone. It's because the police are vacant and that those vacancies are being filled by these sort of groups that seemingly apprehended this lady unlawfully. And the police are happy to observe and to be left out of the ring, the line of fire, right? They don't actually want to engage with these vigilantes because it unfortunately will not end well for them. They've let them carry out these arrests and now they've failed to rail them in to take serious action against them. But also about those middle managers, Nick, they need to be granted enough powers to be able to
Right.
hold people
And you need to
accountable.
change labor law for that.
And unfortunately, in terms of mafias, there's a trade union that you'll have to face if you fire somebody. And so all the incentives to hold people accountable through the right channels, through the proper channels, have just been walked all over, particularly by trade unions who unfortunately have political interests in observing the country, including the police, just fail. So
Yeah, exactly.
it's unfortunate, but the fish rots from the top, and it needs to come from all the way from the executive. Only then can you see a police service start to shape up properly. And if our minister himself is compromised, then I have no confidence.
Having you, what you don't want in an organization is the a senior provincial commissioner accusing the minister of being involved with gangs and oh no, we happen to be there. this
I've
is,
been there for years. I've been
yes,
there
I've
for
been
your
there for years.
maybe days. The first instance of state capture. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
All right. Well, after that thoroughly downer topic, let's talk about something a little bit more exciting. Forgive us, indulge us, please, because we're going to talk a little bit about ourselves. But, Makone, you recently had the opportunity to go to a fun shindig in Kenya, hosted by the Atlas Network, where you took part in a conference that involved groups from all across Africa who are advancing liberty. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
I can indeed. It is called the Atlas Africa Liberty Forum. And Atlas is a non-government organization from the United States. It has presences in every continent and hosts these dialogues of how groups within the continent can advance liberty in their respective countries. So South Africa goes to the Africa One, the Africa Liberty Network. And they have awards there for various competitions, including champion, like the group that advanced liberty the most, the group with the proposal that advanced liberty the most. And this year, the Institute won, the Institute of Race Relations, and I was happy to accept that award on our behalf. It was for our Champions for Growth project. And this Champions for Growth project is pioneered through our Blueprint for Growth series. In the Blueprint for Growth series, we have eight papers that discuss, make plans for how South Africa can engender growth, from things like strengthening property rights to eliminating race-based policies as barriers to growth, to how we can attract foreign direct investment to build more infrastructure maintenance. All of that is within the Blueprint for Growth paper series, and that's what earned us this award from Atlas. So obviously this is a huge recognition from participants across Africa and virtually every, if you ask me this, I encountered so many African countries represented at that event, from the East African ones, Kenya, Uganda, to the Southern African ones, who are very happy to see this award come to the southern region. So your Zimbabwe, your Malawi, to Togo, to Chad in the west of Africa. A group of us were there to exchange best practices on how we can fight against illiberalism in our countries, how we can strengthen things like property rights in our countries, which, when you hear about what other countries are going through, the Expropriation Act sounds like a picnic. It's terrible. But
Was there any group there from South Sudan? Because I can imagine that's probably
yes.
one of the most hectic ones. Yeah, no,
Yes. Then
they
was
make our
represented.
problems look like not much.
Indeed, indeed. Even Nigeria, when you hear statistics like something like 90% of Nigerian land is not registered, it's scary. But these groups that attend this Atlas Network event are there to try and get best practices on which models they can follow from other more successful think tanks to go back to their home countries and try and implement those ideas there. Also, like arm women with property rights, because women bear such a big role in those countries. It's very encouraging to see that we're not just the crazy liberals here at the IRR, but that we have like-minded change makers who are determined to see liberty, freedom, free market enterprise, individual rights be strengthened, be supported, be celebrated in their country. So yeah, it was a wonderful event. I was very happy to accept this award on behalf of the Institute. The Blueprint for Growth series is a worthwhile one, and It's received so much endorsement in the South African political space. We've been able to make or move the needle, shift the needle, and get the focus on growth to be very centered and very pointed. And also to develop plans on how we can get growth. Because, as think tanks, we tend to speak a lot about ideas that we're familiar with, but then taking those ideas to South Africans and making it a grassroots movement so that we are supported by the citizens on the ground and can usher in the pressure from the grassroots into, power brokers and position people who are in positions to influence legislation, influence policy. That stream of gathering momentum for, growth and policy has been achieved, particularly through this Blueprint for Growth papers and the support that we offer it as the campaigns department at the Institute. So yeah, it was very lovely. I was very happy to again receive this award. I know the Institute has put a lot of work into the Blueprint for Growth papers, into ending poverty through growth, into changing this wonderful country of ours and finally getting it on a growth path. So yeah, that's the Institute's commitment. It's to growth. It's to really making a difference in the South African economy. And only through growth and jobs can that be achieved? And individual liberty, obviously, can that be achieved? So, yeah, that was great.
If you go to ir.org.za and you go to publications or you type /reports, you can go and read them all. And they're written by many of the people you see on this show. So yeah, no, we're very proud of it, and we're very happy that that Atlas thought it was useful. So go check those out if you're interested in reading further. But I think let's call it to a close there for today. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching. We hope you found this show interesting. Thank you, McCorney, for being on today. And we hope you all have a wonderful weekend. We will see you all on Monday. Cheers, everyone, and have a great time. Bye-bye.